you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Sarah Dowdy.
And I'm Devlena Chakraborty. And this episode is kind of related to one that we did recently on Tycho Brahe's untimely demise. And in that episode, we touched on his achievements in the field of astronomy, as well as those of well-known astronomers Johannes Kepler and Nicholas Copernicus.
Yeah, but even though those three names are often linked together, they're not all exactly contemporaries. Actually, Tycho and Kepler were contemporaries, but Copernicus died 3 years before Tycho was even born. But because of their work, they're really closely connected, at least to a degree.
Exactly. Copernicus began writing about his heliocentric theory of the universe in the early 1500s, and he published a book about his ideas in 1543 or so, around the year that he died. But this theory, what it was, is it essentially proposed that the sun is the center of the universe, and that Earth and the other planets revolved around the sun. And this was a really controversial idea at the time, since people previously had believed the Earth was at the center of the universe and was stationary.
Yeah. I mean, now we know that Copernicus was right, but it was controversial at the time. Kepler, of course, from the previous episode, Kepler is actually the one who confirmed this heliocentric model using Tycho's data. That's how they all fit together. Even though, ironically, Tycho didn't even agree with Copernicus's model.
No, not at all. He had his own theory about the universe. And actually another discovery, a rather significant discovery of his own, he spotted a supernova in the constellation of Cassiopeia in 1572. He thought at the time, and most people thought at the time, that it was just a new star. Of course, now we know that a supernova is the explosion of a dying star, but it was still considered pretty significant and also controversial at the time. But what was probably most amazing about the observations that were done up to this point by Tycho and others is that they were done pretty much with the naked eye. They had some instruments, but they were pretty much going solo. And the work of the first astronomer on this list, though, kind of changed that.
Yeah, you can imagine if you start bringing in some tools, you're going to have an explosion in discoveries.
Right. So the first discovery we're going to look at was made by a guy who you might have heard of, Sarah. I'm not sure. His name's Galileo.
Galileo, also my favorite search engine for finding out all of this historical information.
So true. Now, Galileo was an Italian astronomer, born 1564, died 1642, and he was also known for his contributions in mathematics and science. He was the first astronomer to use a telescope, so that's kind of what we're referring to before. He wasn't the inventor of the telescope, we should point that out. He was just the first to use it for astronomical purposes. And he actually constructed the first known complete astronomical telescope, which was basically a crude refracting telescope with a convex objective lens and a concave eyepiece in a long tube.
Which, not to discredit Galileo, but it seems like somebody might have put together such a simple device before this point. But, you know, with this new contraption, he is able to observe a lot and make a lot of new discoveries. And one of the most significant observations was that of the Milky Way, which, of course, is the galaxy we live in, and that's how we know it now. He observed that the Milky Way is composed of billions of individual stars. And until this point, people just sort of saw it as this band of bright light going across the sky. They didn't realize what it was actually made of.
Yes, the Greeks called the light Galaxias Kouklos, or Milk Circle. But when Galileo turned his telescope on it, this fancy new device that he realized that the stars were actually emitting the light that people had seen for so many years. And no one had figured this out before because the stars were just too faint or distant to be seen with the naked eye.
Yeah, you could just see their collective star shine, not the individual bodies.
And later astronomers who had stronger instruments to work with, they were able to expand on this knowledge and determine the galaxy's shape, its composition, and so forth. But Galileo kind of started it by figuring out what was there in the first place.
Yeah, so that's his most famous contribution to astronomy, probably, but he's got a lot of other impressive contributions, which also stemmed from having this new device. He discovered that the moon had this cratery, mountainous surface, and he observed four moons of Jupiter and observed the phases of Venus and sunspots, which sounds kind of dangerous looking at the sun with your new telescope, Galileo, but I don't know. And of course, all of these findings helped really confirm that Copernican view that the sun was at the center of our solar system.
Yep, it all comes back to Copernicus again. And again, this idea, Copernicus's idea, is causing controversy because Galileo later published works in support of the Copernican system, and that's what famously got him in trouble with the church eventually, because the church decided in 1616 that the Copernican system was dangerous to faith, and so Galileo, as many know, was forced to live out the rest of his days in seclusion.
But fortunately, we have other astronomers on our list.
Yes.
The next one is Edmund Halley, who you may have heard his name before as well.
Yeah, I think pretty much everyone knows what he's famous for, but we'll give you a little background on him anyway. Edmund Halley was an English astronomer and mathematician who was born in 1656 and died in 1742. And he was fortunate enough to live during a time of scientific revolution, unlike a lot of the astronomers that we've looked at here.
Unlike Galileo.
Right, and he was actually encouraged to study astronomy, and it didn't take too long for him to make a name for himself in the field.
Yeah, so when he was only about 20 years old, it was 1676, 1678, he cataloged the celestial longitudes and latitudes of 341 stars. And remarkably, that was the first work of its kind about stars in the southern hemisphere. People knew a lot about what was going on in the top half of the globe, but not so much about the southern hemisphere. And he was good buddies with Isaac Newton, too, in the 1680s. And he even assisted Newton in publishing his influential work, The Principia.
Later, Halley even became Astronomer Royal in 1720. But as we mentioned before, he's most well known for a certain achievement in observational astronomy that involves comets.
Yeah, his work started when he studied the parabolic orbits of 24 comets that had been observed from 1337 to 1698, and he published these findings in a work called A Synopsis of the Astronomy of Comets. And he made a really amazing discovery in that work, that three of these historic comets, one from 1531, 1607, and 1682, which is, that last one is the one that he observed personally, he realized that they were so similar that they had to have been the same comet. And from that, he realized that, well, the comet was due back again.
Right. The thing that really clinched it is that he accurately predicted the return of said comet in 1758. And he didn't live to see it, unfortunately, but today it's known as Halley's Comet. So he did receive credit for his discovery.
Yeah, and Devlina and I were talking about it earlier, but we are not the right age for Halley's Comet.
Yeah, I'm kind of bummed about that.
Way too young, or we'll be really old next time it comes around.
Yeah, theoretically, we could have seen it in 86, but
I wouldn't have remembered if I did.
No, unfortunately.
Apparently, too, the 86 comet pass was not a very impressive one, so maybe we didn't miss that much.
Oh, well, they did, I think, manage to collect a lot of data about it.
Yeah, so there's something. All right, well, the next entry on our list didn't just discover a comet. I think he did one better than that.
Yep, he discovered an entire planet, and we are talking about Sir William Herschel, who was a German-born British astronomer, born 1738, died in 1822. And he actually, I find this really interesting, he started out as a musician, and he played the oboe, and music is what eventually led him to an interest in mathematics and in lenses, which eventually led him then to astronomy. But like the others on this list, Herschel was known for making several contributions to astronomy. So before we talk about his major discovery, we'll mention a few of those. He studied binary stars and nebula, and he theorized that nebula are composed of stars. And so, like I said, these are just a couple of the many, many observations that he made. But he's also known for having kind of a crazy theory.
Definitely.
Yeah, a little bit out there. He thought that life existed on all planets and the sun, in fact.
The clincher.
Yeah, that's kind of the really wacky one. He thought that this was possible because the sun had a cool surface and that the heat that emanated off
of
it, a cool solid surface, yep, and that the heat that came from it actually emanated from the atmosphere, but that there was a layer of clouds in between the atmosphere and the ground that protected the people who live there.
Sun inhabitants.
The sun
inhabitants.
I wonder
what you would call them.
Yeah, I don't know if he thought they were people.
Solarians, maybe.
So an interesting idea, but generally considered to be a little out there. But what he's best known for, as we mentioned, is discovering the seventh planet, Uranus,
in 1781. And he discovered the planet while he was doing a survey of all the stars that were about 10 times dimmer than those that you could see with the naked eye. And other astronomers had, of course, observed Uranus before, but they thought it was a star. He realized that it was something other than a star because it was a disk shape, which is not a stellar attribute. And this was a really big deal. I mean, not just because it's a new planet, but because up until that point, there was this consensus among scientists that there were only six planets. There was Earth and then five planets that had been observed as long as recorded history. And that change, you know, the admission that there could be new planets really opened up astronomers to go look for others. And this paved the way for the discovery of Neptune in 1846 by Johann Gall. So, I mean, it's a big change, not just in what astronomers knew, but what they were willing to believe.
Absolutely. The next person on this list also had an interesting discovery that that kind of changed the way people perceive the universe. And we're talking about Giuseppe Piazzi, who is an Italian astronomer, born 1746, died 1826. And he was also, interestingly, a Theatine monk and a professor of theology. He became a mathematics professor at the Academy of Palermo in 1780, and he also founded the Observatory of Palermo, which is where he did a lot of his work, and it was there that he cataloged 7,646 stars, which to me is just an amazing, huge number of stars. But most significantly, in 1801, he discovered and named the first asteroid, Ceres.
Yeah, and he took three separate observations of it and worked on calculating its orbit and did so with surprising accuracy, so much so that the following year, his predictions of its position turned out to be accurate. So Ceres has a mass of 1/100,000th that of Earth. So it's really small compared to a planet, but it's huge compared to, you know, your average asteroid. In fact, it's the biggest, most massive asteroid in the asteroid belt that's between Mars and Jupiter.
Right. It's so big that at the time, he called it, people thought it was a minor planet of sorts. Of course, after a few years, I think about 1850, its classification changed to asteroid, because many other asteroids were found thanks to his discovery and they were identified. And so that allowed, again, a new sort of perception of the universe. And then in 2006, after the controversy, the big hullabaloo over Pluto, is it a planet or not? Yep. Pluto got downgraded and Ceres kind of got upgraded. It was reclassified as a dwarf planet.
Yeah, I guess because if Pluto isn't going to be a planet, then Ceres needs a little boost. So from this point, we're going to go extragalactic and go beyond our own solar system at last.
And it's Edwin Powell Hubble who takes us there. He's an American astronomer. 1889 is when he was born, and he died in 1953. And he started out a lot like Tycho. If you listen to that podcast, then you'll know that Tycho started out studying law because his uncle, who's basically like a father to him, had raised him, pressured him to do so. But he was always interested in astronomy and was kind of studying it on the sly all the time. And Hubble was a lot the same way. He was studying law at the insistence of his father, but then finally when his father died in 1913, he got his chance to pursue a graduate degree in astronomy.
Yeah, even though he had another delay with the onset of World War I, but finally, after the war is over, he was able to make up for all this lost time and really get to making some serious observations.
Yep, and he was working at Mount Wilson Observatory in California and studying spiral nebula, which is what he had done his doctorate on. These were problematic because nobody could tell exactly what the spirals were. Were they other star systems? Were they clouds of gas within or near the Milky Way? What were they? Nobody knew. So his research led to the discovery that there are, in fact, other galaxies that exist outside the Milky Way, and this was kind of known as his major contribution. He pulled this achievement off by studying variable stars in the Andromeda Nebula and using the fluctuations of light in these stars to kind of figure out the nebula's distance. And he found out that that distance was 900,000 light years away, which was far beyond the borders of the Milky Way.
Yeah, and so his finds with the Andromeda Nebula and other spiral nebula convinced a lot of astronomers that the universe was made out of multiple galaxies. There wasn't just ours. There were countless galaxies. And the Andromeda Nebula is, of course, now known as the Andromeda Galaxy, appropriately enough. And it's interesting, but later he even proposed a theory for why the majority of these external galaxies appeared to be moving away from us, moving away from Earth. Later, he even proposed a theory about why it seemed the majority of external galaxies were moving away from Earth, you know, moving away from where we are. And so that was sort of the key to the establishment of extragalactic astronomy.
And of course, the Hubble Space Telescope, which launched into space in 1990 and has led to so many more discoveries, was named for him.
Yeah, we have an article on the Hubble.
We do have an article on how the Hubble Space Telescope works, and many astronomy articles, actually.
Okay. So we're pretty stocked in this department.
Yep, and so while we've wrapped up today's list, you can continue to find out a lot more about what discoveries were made about space and explore that.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I know we've only covered five amazing astronomical discoveries, and I'm sure there are many more favorites you have, and you can email us at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com or find us on Twitter at Missed in History or on Facebook, and, I don't know, throw in your vote for your favorite astronomical discovery.
Yeah, the rings of Saturn, Pluto.
Yeah.
Tell us what your favorites are. And again, if you want to look up those astronomy articles we mentioned, you can find them by visiting our homepage and typing in astronomy at www.howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The How Stuff Works iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie.
Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.